Welcome to Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I am Joe Galena.
Acknowledge me.
And I'm here with my buddy, Scott Chu. What's going on there, Scott?
Oh, not much. You know, just living the dream. Wife, very pregnant with twins. Uh-huh. I'm preparing for a slew of drafts I have in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, we get many. You're getting a crunch time when it comes to drafting. And, you know, like we were talking just before the show, I'm getting kind of like a feel for what your life is going to be like, because I'm babysitting a pug puppy this weekend. And we were delayed in getting to start our podcast because I had to get her to go down for her nap. So, you know, I'm just getting a little feel for what your life is going to be like in, you know, just a few short weeks, right?
Yeah, I mean, pretty, you know, it's not that different. You know, people always talk about, oh, puppies and babies aren't the same. But, like, there is a lot of similarities between the puppies and babies. Like,
yes.
They've got a lot. Your schedule is now just their schedule. Like, when do I get to sleep? When do I get to rest? When do I get to do my stuff, my me time? It's whenever they let you.
Exactly. And I'm excited that we get to, hopefully we get to meet each other face to face. It looks like you're coming to New York. You're doing your draft next Saturday. By the way, we're recording this podcast on March 12th, 11:13 a.m. right now in Eastern Standard Time. We move the clocks ahead. But we're getting ready to draft. You said you got a few more coming up as well, but you're getting ready for your auction draft, right, this coming Saturday, the 18th.
Yes, sir. I've got the mixed auction with Tout.
And it's Roto, right? Roto scoring?
Yeah. Or? Yep. Okay. Ours is Roto. I'm up against some dude named Nick Pollock. Never heard of him. Interested to see how he does in the draft.
Nick Pollock. I think
I haven't heard of him. Yeah. Yeah.
Nick Solik? No, Nick Pollock.
Okay. Rings a bell. Right. But yeah, so it'll be fun. I'm going to have been awake for like 24 hours or something. Well, not quite that long, but I have to leave. You know, I'm driving so that I can turn around at any time because, you know, the wife's pregnant with twins, could come out really at any time. So I'm driving. I'm leaving at like Saturday morning, midnight, right? 12:30, because my draft's at 2:30 and it's a 12-hour drive. So
God bless you, man.
I'm doing this game so much, Joe.
There you go. Well, yeah, you know, it's our first, both you and I, first time that we're in Tout Wars. And on Sunday, the 19th, I'm doing the auction head to head 12 team league. So I'm like knee deep in my preparations, too. I'm taking a look at what happened in the draft last year. Looking at draft results from the labor mixed auction, which happened last Sunday, and just trying to get an idea, you know, obviously valuing my players, putting my limits, upper limits on player values, and trying to figure out what's going to happen, what the room is going to be like. But we were talking just before the show how obviously every draft is different. You could put together rankings, you could put together values, but come draft day, you don't know what's going to happen.
That's exactly right. We can make these, you know, I make the hitter list. I've got rankings out on the site right now, but you have to remember that those are a vacuum, right? Like, those ranks aren't for your team. They're just in general. And after about two rounds of drafting, you no longer are in general, right? You have a team, you have strengths, you have weaknesses, you have things you need to address, right? Just two rounds. Right. You could even argue that it happens after even one round, depending on the player you take. Yeah. Right. So when you're doing that, you know, part of your prep is you can set these ranges, but like those ranges need to be dynamic. Right.
Right.
If I'm in a Roto league. So it's really difficult to punt any particular category. Right. Correct. At least to an extreme. I could choose to do that because there's not an overall component. But that, even just choosing to do that, which I never really want to decide going in. That's a decision I would make during a draft where I'd say, like, okay, I haven't been able to get any of my stolen base targets. I don't like anything that's left. I don't want to overpay for some of the guys still available. So now I will choose to punt, let's say, stolen bases or batting average. That's fine. But it changes the values that I put on my board, right? Mm-hmm. Because all of a sudden, right, a player's value may have been pushed up quite a bit by their stolen bases. And I'll be like, well, I don't care about that anymore. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do any value checking on that. Whereas other players who maybe had their value pushed down a little bit because they don't steal, I might be like, oh, I'll spend an extra $2 or $3 because that was assuming I wanted the steals. And now I don't. Right. So that was just important to me that I get this player. And I know that other people might not value him as much. So, you know, one of the worst things I think is to be too rigid when you make those rankings. We can talk about people being disciplined. Like, you're going to be up against Ariel Cohen, and, you know, he's the creator of ATC. He's one of the most disciplined guys out there.
Oh yeah.
But he changed, like, there is no way that he comes in with a set of values and does not reconsider those values during, like, during the draft or the auction, right? Like, that, you have to do that.
You have to be flexible. You have to move with the draft.
Right. It, and it's, again, part of it is understanding who else is in the room with you. So when we talk about doing some of these industry drafts, what's kind of nice is you can go and listen to them. I've got a 12-hour drive on the way to New York, and you can, ink it in. I'm going to be listening to the other people in my draft.
Hey, think about the conversations you've had with Nick Pollock over the past several weeks, right? You already have an insight into what he's going to do.
Sorry, Nick. Yeah. You know, I have no idea what he's going to do with hitters, but I have some idea of what he's going to do on the pitching side, right? Or at least what he'd value, right? Now, granted, it's a little different. He likes to talk about 12-team leagues, and this is a 15-team roto. So some of the guys that he would push down, those Tobys, he always talks about. Tobys are more valuable in a 15-team
roto. And Toby stands for?
I can't remember what it stands for. It means like the average guy, right? Like not a big upside play, like just a dude. But the Miles Michaelises of the world and Logan Webbs are really valuable in those because it's a bunch of steady innings, and the replacement level in a 15-team league gets really gross. So, you know, it's also one of the things I'm going to do is try to listen to breakdowns of other industry drafts. Now, one thing we always talk about is no one cares about your fantasy team, right? Like, nobody cares about your specific fantasy teams. Like, your coworkers don't, your spouses don't, whoever don't. But there's some real interesting value to take from some of these industry drafts, because you get to see what people did as their drafts unfolded, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yes, I can see someone's rankings. That's great, right? But those rankings are, as we just said, they're dynamic in a draft. Things move around. Your valuations, they change, not just because you get new news or anything, but because you see, like, okay, what did people do when they found themselves short on stolen bases, short on saves, short on runs scored? What did they do, right? Who did they move up their board? What did they value, right? Who did they make big jumps on? Who did they set min picks for, right? And why? Was it a situation? Is it just because they love that player? Is it because they have some insider knowledge, or is it because they just had a need?
Sometimes someone might make a bid on a player, and they might think that player is going to be valued higher, and then all of a sudden they're getting value on them. And, like, for instance, in last weekend's labor draft, I think Trout went for $30. You know, and if you look at a lot of the auction calculators, they value him a lot higher. Dylan Cease, I think he went for, if I'm not mistaken, he went for $18 last week. And Cease, I know that he has his some warts, right? But he's a guy that's going to give you innings and a lot of strikeouts. So sometimes when you think about it too, when you hear the players described and analyzed in podcasts and radio shows and whatnot, the negative comments that are associated with them, sometimes, you know, listeners take that to heart, and it drives down value, you know?
Yeah, and again, it's another important feature of auction drafts is that in a snake draft, you are simply out on certain players because you won't get to pick then.
Right.
Right? You pick on the turn in a 15-team league. There's a big group of players that are just unlikely to ever come to you unless you want to take them very early or they slip very far.
Right.
In an auction, everyone's on the table. You can bid on any, especially early on, you can bid on every player, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, there's a bunch of people coming out of those drafts probably kicking themselves thinking, I wish I hadn't just said I was out on so-and-so.
Right. Another $2 and I would have got. Yeah. Place. Yeah. What's another $2 on a Trout getting him for $32? I mean, look, I know that he has this back issue that's got to be monitored, but when he's on the field, I mean, he's a 40 homer guy, and hopefully we've gotten to the point, well, the Angels have gotten to a point where they can manage his injury, where he gets his 500 to 550 at bats. No.
Yeah. And it's also wondering how disciplined folks are, right? Cause there are auction calculators that'll tell you that Mike Trout is a is a $30 player, for example. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean people aren't going to overbid on that. Correct. It happens all the time, especially at the top end of each rank. You'll see overbids, right? So right. I know I'm going to be listening in to see what happened in auctions at third base, right? Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. we talked about third base a lot, and that it's a position with that's very top heavy. So mm-hmm. did those guys get overvalued? Like, did they get overbid? Like, how much was bid on Alex Bregman? Right. Mm-hmm. He's this way to sort of judge how your league is going to look at third base, right? Because Alex Bregman is sort of like that. He almost feels like a one person tier, right? Yeah. You have like the top six, and then you have Alex Bregman, and then you sort of have everyone else. It changes OBP leagues.
But so in labor last weekend, he went for $16.
Which actually is a little low compared right. to what auction calculators will say, right? Because maybe mm-hmm. other folks were like, I don't want the middle guy. I'll wait.
Arenado went for 24. So I think we both agree that like Arenado is kind of like where the top five or six third baseman tier like separates itself, no?
Yeah, and I'd also say in an auction, there's a huge piece of strategy about when you nominate players. When do you nominate a specific player to go up for auction, right? I know that if I am targeting the later third baseman, like middle to later third baseman, what I'm going to do, and actually I've been thinking about this strategy quite a bit. If I go into an auction and I'm like, I'm telling myself, I want everyone to spend a bunch of money on third base because I really like maybe Alec Bohm or Yandy Diaz or or Ke'Bryan Hayes or Eugenio Suarez, if that's what I'm going for, every single time it's my turn to nominate, you know what I'm picking? The next third baseman. Because I want that money spent.
Yeah.
I want
yeah.
people going.
That's a strategy,
like,
definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a huge
get your league mates to spend their money, yeah. While and what about an opening bid? Like for instance, you're not gonna throw out Aaron Judge for $1. You're going to throw him out for what, 20? I mean, you know, just in terms of courtesy or etiquette in terms of an auction, just to make it move along. I mean, it's silly to throw out like a superstar player for $1. No?
I mean, there are people that will tell you that that's a good strategy because you never want to, you know, you hate to throw a bid out there and then no one bid against you because then you are kind of bidding against yourself.
Right.
But early in the draft, like if someone doesn't do that, I will with the next bid. Right. If they throw out Judge for $1, my next bid is Aaron Judge 25.
Right.
Right. Yeah. let's move this along. Right. And it'll generally get up there pretty quick. And again,
he went for 44, by the way, in the labor draft last week.
There are very smart people that will tell you to never bid more than $1 up. And that's a good strategy. But like, let's also remember that you're not getting Aaron Judge for $4.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen. Like every league is different, but they ain't that different. Like maybe in an NL only, right? And you might get judged for $4.
Just in case he gets traded to the Padres, right?
Even then. So it's something to think about. You know what kind of draft you're going into. I know most people are going to do snake drafts. Last thing I'll say is just really think about doing an auction league. I think you'll find it's a ton of fun. It's really fun when you start talking about keepers and dynasty because it just adds a really unique flavor.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it harder to get generic advice, but you get to just do a lot more of the neurotic thinking that we're all kind of here to do.
Right.
So I really like auction leagues. And again, it's a way the way to build your team is unlimited in auction. Mm-hmm. You can do stars and scrubs. You can do all mid-tier players, right? You can do, I'm never spending more than $30 for a player. I'm going to do super balance. Like you can't do that in a snake draft because with your first pick, you need to take the next best player. But in auction, you don't have to do that. You just don't. Right. If your league starts overvaluing all the top pieces, you can decide, I'm not going to play a part in that.
Right.
I'll let them all go stars and scrubs. I'll go balance, and I bet I can beat them. You get to be super dynamic. It's super flexible, super fun. Please give it a try. We have an auction calculator we're going to have up on the site. It's been down for a little while. We've had some bugs on the back end with that. But still, it's really fun, and I'm really excited for our tout auctions, and we'll have some fun discussing them in a context that hopefully can help other people either do their auction or snake drafts.
Yep. I'll just throw this out there. Maybe you could even help me out because it's a head-to-head league, right? And it's a points-based, so you know, single you get a 1 point, double 2 points, triple, three home runs, four RBIs and runs are, and walks are one, and stolen base is 2 points. Then minus 0.5 for a strikeout, minus one for caught stealing. So, you know, I was just thinking about this, and I've got a week to really solidify my my strategy. But, you know, and I come back to what you had said in the past, like, because we've been working together now for, you know, what is it, a couple of years now. And in head-to-head leagues, for instance, you don't need to win a category by 10 points. I mean, you know, like, for instance, when it comes to stolen bases, as long as you beat your opponent for the week in a head-to-head competition by one, you're fine, right? So I guess you're trying to balance out your roster where you get enough players where they're going to get, you know, kind of a steady stream of stolen bases. I mean, you know, but at the same time, you know, when I looking at the hitting scoring, you know, 4 points for a home run, I think I'm going to want to get at least two guys that are 35 and homer guys, you know, on my team. And I was looking at, you know, obviously, you know, do I spend up on Judge? You know, I mean, I could just as easily go for an outfielder that I know is going to, like a Hunter Renfro, I know is going to get 30 home runs, you know. First base, I mean, you know, Freddie Freeman is way up there in value. But I could get, you know, Matt Olson for a lot cheaper, and he hits more home runs than Freddie Freeman these days. You know, so there's a balance.
Yeah, so points leagues are really interesting. Again, we could spend a whole episode talking about points leagues, although they're also very difficult to talk about because everyone's got different point settings.
Sure.
But, you know, the thing with points leagues is it doesn't matter how they get the points. So the reason Freddie Freeman's going to be so far up there in those is because he doesn't strike out a lot, and he puts a ton of balls in play.
Right.
So he gets those singles, those doubles all over the place, where Matt Olson is a little bit more home run or bust, right? Not entirely, but that's a big part of his game. So that batting average, you know, batting average isn't a category, but it sort of is, right? That's why a player like Luis Arraez is so valuable in those leagues, because those singles and doubles don't matter for regular fantasy, because singles and doubles probably aren't a category, but they are points, right?
Yeah. Like, and looking at Matt Olson, right? He had 35 doubles in 2021 and 44 last year. So he's going to give me 35 home runs and then a ton of doubles, and they're worth 2 points each.
Yeah. And the doubles matter. So,
yeah,
you know, there's no more useful tool heading into a points league than an auction calculator. FanGraphs has a good one. You know, we're going to have a good one when it comes up, but it's really the best way, because if all you do is look at the categories, your brain is going to overestimate the impact of certain things. Like the moment you said minus 0.5 for Ks, there's players in everyone's mind that started flashing like avoid this guy, avoid this guy.
Right.
But that might not be true because they do so much other stuff, right? Like players who strike out a lot but also walk a lot have now offset that problem, because a walk is worth more than a strikeout.
Right.
So if they're walking quite a bit, then they've already canceled out that strikeout problem. Now, granted, a walk isn't as good of a hit as a hit, because a walk is unlikely to create an RBI. It's never going to turn it, you know, it can't squeeze by and turn into a double. Like, it's always just that 1 point. But it still matters, because that minus 0.5 is now offset. As long as that strikeout to walk rate is decent, like a 10% walk rate and 20% strikeout rate, means that's all canceled out in the wash, right? Mm-hmm. So just a lot of things to think about. Those auction calculators can really help you understand what types of players are valued more or less. Mm-hmm. You'll generally find in a league like that where it's only 2 points for a stolen base, so stolen base is worth about the same as hitting a double.
Right.
But how many 30 double players are there, and how many 30 stolen base players are there? Right. And then you also have to take into account that you lose a point every time they get caught. Starling Marte was caught a ton of times last year.
Right.
So that takes stuff out too. So you tend to find that these stolen base guys don't matter. Bobby Witt, I'm guessing, is probably way down compared to his normal ranking in that league, because in Roto, stolen bases have a disproportionate amount of value. Mm-hmm. And in points, they are just not that valuable at all.
Mm.
Right? Because it's only 2 points.
Yeah, but you know, he in terms of him, 30 stolen bases last season, got caught seven times, hit 20 home runs, and 31 doubles. So, you know, the double, I'm looking at doubles too, you know, and you mentioned doubles obviously being important. But yeah, this is really fun to look at the point structure in the league and trying to figure out a strategy, you know?
Yeah.
So
other than get the most points.
Right. Yeah, that's the strategy. Just win every week, right? So, all right. This might be actually a good time to take our first break. And then we want to talk about some player injuries, some players that are moving up and down in ADP, maybe even some WBC observations. We'll be back right after this. All right, we're back. Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. So, Scott, have you been watching any of the WBC?
When I can. You know, it's on at a little bit of weird hours, but I love the energy. I love how exciting. It's not that, you know, spring training, everyone's trying to get loose or whatever. In the WBC, these guys are trying to win games.
Yes.
I love it. I love the energy coming out of teams like, you know, Taiwan. And, I mean, just, you know, Italy has an espresso.
Dugout. I'm going to tell you, I haven't watched much myself either, but this morning I watched a few minutes of the Italy-Netherlands game. Try to catch the video of pitcher Joe Lasorsa got out of a bases-loaded jam in the sixth against the Netherlands. His reaction, like in a regular MLB baseball game, the next inning, the next batter up would have gotten beamed in the head the way that this guy acted. But like you said, just the energy that these players have is really, really refreshing to see. And but on the other hand, I don't want any of my fantasy players to be part of the WBC. I don't even know why. Why is Juan Soto? He's been dealing with this calf injury. Why is he playing? Why are the Padres letting him play?
I mean, I'm glad he is because I want to see him play.
Why? Because I understand why you'd want him because now you feel more comfortable in drafting him, but you just hope that he doesn't aggravate it.
Because I like watching him play.
I know, right? But you don't want him to aggravate it, especially if you roster him in a dynasty league or if you did an early season draft. It's like, you know, please, you know, treat him with kid gloves.
Yeah, and yeah. I mean, speaking of Juan Soto, if you're in points leagues, he tends to be the best player because he has those crazy walk rates, tons of balls in play, never strikes out, those kinds of things. But you know, with Juan Soto, again, I think one of the if they're letting him play in the WBC. You know, the Padres aren't that stupid. If they are letting him play, it's because they probably don't think that he will be in a position to hurt himself more because they won't let him.
Right.
Right. And so
you've given the Padres a lot of credit and yeah, they're a great organization. I'm sure. I love the way that they've been aggressive in getting players, but you know, like Chris Sale, right? The Red Sox signed him a few years back to a long-term deal. And I'm like, you know, he had been injury prone up until that point. And I'm like, well, look, if the Red Sox assign him to a long-term deal, he should be, you know, healthy and whatnot. And what has happened since he signed that long-term deal? He's just been on he's got a Tommy John surgery. He's been on the IL. Whatnot. So don't give these organizations too much credit there, Scott. For being
well,
smart.
You know, not too much, but in the short term, they're not too bad at evaluating risk. And also, you have to remember there is a human component here. If they want to keep Juan Soto long term, they might need to let him do this because he almost certainly is dying to play for the Dominican Republic. And if you don't
on a world stage, yes, he's that kind of guy that thrives on that.
If you don't let him, you know, you don't want to be like the Brewers and, you know, just upset every good player that falls into your lap.
Corbin Burns, you're not that good. You're not that good.
I mean, to be fair, that's the entire point of arbitration. For teams to tell players they aren't that good so they don't have to pay them. But again, that could also be its own podcast. But, you know, I think with the WBC, it is good to see players in game situations. I mean, it's just spring training with more energy for a lot of these guys. If they are hurting, they won't play. But
what I don't like, dude, is that they're not using the new rules. You know, so now this is an important spring training. Now, everyone's coming in this season saying, wow, you know, it's the first spring training, no COVID, no threat of a work stoppage and this and that. But there is an adjustment going on right now to the pitch clock, the getting in the box and engaging with the pitcher. But that's not, you know, it's almost like some of the players are probably breathing a sigh of relief because they don't have to deal with these new rules. I don't like that.
Yeah. You know? That's an issue to an extent, but for a guy like Vinny Pasquantino, who played in the minor leagues last year,
Pasquatch? Yeah.
Yeah. So the minor leagues had these rules last year. Mm-hmm. So anyone that played in the minors last year is ready for it. And it's not as though you can't simulate a play clock. Right?
Well, yeah, sure, like, you can. Yeah, of course.
It is the kind of thing. And I do think, you know, there's been a lot of discourse about the new rules. We've talked about them a little bit in a past show. I think the only thing to do wrong is to overvalue the impact of these rules, because the league will adjust to them like they adjust to everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see. The first month and a half of regular season baseball is going to be interesting and a lot of fun. But, okay, so we talked about the WBC. I had read last night, and you got to help me out here if this is actually true, because I've been babysitting the pug. But Corbin Carroll signed an extension, 8-year extension with the D-backs.
He sure did. $111 million. Very Atlanta Braves of
them. Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's a club option, which brings the total up to $134 million. Corbin Carroll, you know, the speedster. actually, and his ADP has gone up about 7% over the past week, one of the movers and shakers. Any shares of him yet there, Scott?
Not quite yet, but not because I don't want him, but because mm-hmm. I just haven't been able to draft them. I think in OBP leagues, he should move up your board. He's got excellent play discipline. We didn't see a ton in his mm-hmm. debut last season that would make you think, oh my gosh, this is the best prospect in baseball. But let me be clear. He is, as long as he has his eligibility, he is the best prospect in baseball right now. And you should be very excited about him. I think he's going to, the steals, I think, should be an impact right away. I think the OBP will be an impact right away. It's going to be a question of how much the power play is early, because there's a little more to power than just being strong, right? You got to time, you got to find the ball in the zone. More pitchers have more ways to attack you. You know, in the minors, you run into a lot of guys who have just two pitches, and maybe one of them is major league quality. In the majors, everybody's got one or two major league quality pitches, if not three or four. So it can be a little bit more difficult. But again, that's a thing to watch for. You know, and I know we're going to talk more about spring training, but one of the things to watch for in spring training is not so much just power, because, you know, the fields are all different. Some of mm-hmm. them are more hitter friendly. Some of them are more pitcher friendly, but what you do get to see is play discipline. Mm-hmm. And yes, they are going to face a lot of hitter or pitchers that maybe aren't super major league quality, but I am looking for changes, or, you know, sort of reaffirming how guys are in the box. Corbin Carroll has looked pretty good this spring. So, you know, he's a player that, you know, I'm still excited about, because I know he's got the play discipline and I know he's got the talent. So there's a bit of risk in taking him, especially because you kind of need to take him as your outfielder one or two. But mm-hmm. I still think Corbin Carroll is someone that you can definitely target, especially in OBP, especially if you're in a league where you start to see that he's slipping because folks really want the safer play at the top. That has happened in a few leagues. I wasn't there in time to scoop him up in a snake draft. But if that happens, be ready, because I do think Corbin Carroll is a major contributor, especially if you care about stolen bases.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of early season drafters breathing a sigh of relief, including myself, with Yordan Alvarez, outfielder for the Astros, finally getting to swing a bat. I picked him with the 14th overall in my TGFBI league, which started in the middle of February. And, you know, there were whispers about the wrist issue and him not swinging a bat, but then, you know, week by week, did he swing yet? No. Did he swing yet? No. And then all of a sudden, I actually saw this morning on Sunday that he swung a bat and no issues. So, you know, had you been avoiding him or whatnot, or, you know, what's your take on Alvarez?
I've not been avoiding him in the slightest. As of right now, we still think he'll be ready for opening day. If he's not ready quite for opening day, I don't expect him to miss more than like a week. He's a hitter. He doesn't need that same kind of ramp up time that a pitcher does. If he's taking swings, he's taking batting practice, he's ready to play, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, there's always a little bit of adjustment time, but as of now, it still sounds like he's going to be there. And let's be clear, we never thought he was going to play 152 games. 100 or even 100.
I was hoping.
Not 162. Maybe,
no, not 162. No.
He played 135 games last year with 37 home runs, 95 runs scored, 97 RBI, and a 306 mm-hmm. batting average, 406 OBP. Yordan Alvarez will get you the numbers as long as he only misses about 20 games, mm-hmm. right? 20 to 30 games is about how much we might expect him to miss. That's, you know, one long IL stint or a couple, you know, it's just days off here and there. He's still, I mean, I don't think anyone should be changing their projections on Yordan Alvarez right now. And if you've got good projections and you know that he's a, you know, borderline top five outfielder, I mean, he's at the end of the first, you know, at the end of the first round there, I think that's excellent value. Yeah, sure, he doesn't steal bases, but he does everything else.
Yes, absolutely. Any other injuries causing you concern? I know on a personal note, Harrison Bader for a Yankee outfielder that probably not being drafted except for five outfielder leagues. Maybe you might make him your third outfielder because of the stolen base potential, but expected to miss up to 6 weeks due to an oblique strain. I would love to see Jason Dominguez and his, I think he has four preseason home runs already, given a legit shot to make the Yankee roster, but has only five games in Double A. It wasn't very impressive in the Arizona Fall League, but Willie Calhoun has had a pretty good spring, and it looks like Esteban Florial might benefit a little bit from this, but you know, hasn't done much of anything in small sample sizes in the bigs. But any other injuries that are giving you pause?
Well, with the Bader one, I think the real winner here is Oswaldo Cabrera. I think he's going to be the one that's going to slot in there. He's got power and speed. The batting average won't be great, but I think, you know, if you look at roster resource right now, they have him hitting fifth.
Right.
Right. So, look, I don't know what his full season value will be, because as soon as Bader is ready, there's a big log jam there for the Yankees, and he becomes a part-time player. But, man, for the month of April, Oswaldo Cabrera could be a heck of a player. And in 12-team leagues, especially 12-team with three outfielders, I love picking him up in your draft, because, you know, as your third outfielder, or maybe that one, you know, that second utility guy or something like that, because you get a whole month of production out of him in an ideal spot in the lineup with very little real competition. I am not worried about Oswaldo Cabrera splitting time. He is a switch hitter, so it's not like they need to put in Florial, who, you know, Florial is at one time a top 100 prospect because he's got power, speed, and all those things, but he has contact problems. So there's only so much I think he can really put pressure on the rest of the lineup. So Oswaldo Cabrera is really the big winner there. I think a guy who we've talked about a little bit, who had a ton of helium, I think the biggest one to watch for right now is Jordan Walker. Jordan Walker dealing with a strained shoulder. We just found out it's not clear whether or not he's day to day. So technically it's not clear whether he'll miss time at the beginning of the season, but yet another reason for the Cardinals to not put him on the major league roster on day one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, it's hard to project more. I mean, what do you know? It's a real crowded outfield for the Cardinals. No matter how many guys the Cardinals get rid of, they've got a crowded outfield, right? Yeah. Tyler O'Neill isn't hurt yet. So there's still a lot of, you know, there's a lot of bodies in that outfield. It's really hard to know who's going to play. Jordan Walker, I think, is a guy you should be excited about. He's had an amazing spring. He has tons of power. He's looked great. He has a limited minor league track record so far in terms of the high minors, but he's looked really good. It's just hard to project more than half a season. And the higher up he goes in drafts, the harder it is for me to say, yeah, go for it, especially in like a Yahoo style league where there's no corner infield. You only get the three outfield spots. It's really hard to buy in totally because, number one, he's only going to be third base eligible to start the season, which, I mean, third base is a position of need, but also you only need one or two on your roster, especially in those kind of formats. Number two, again, he may only be a part-time player, because there are other major league caliber players to play in that outfield.
Right.
Right.
Alec? This might give Alec Burleson a shot to make the team or get a call. He definitely should be a guy that you keep on your watch list. I mean, the guy's batting 300, 350, 492 in just two minor league seasons, but somebody to really look at.
Yeah. And I've really liked Lars Nootbaar. He's someone who.
Yeah. He's a guy that a lot of people like. Yes.
Yeah, and if Jordan Walker makes the roster, who loses time, right? Mm-hmm, it's going to be a mixture of guys. I'm not sure any of them will play 7 days a week, right? Mm-hmm. I think they all might be kind of rotating in and out. So really hard to see what's going on there, but that is a big injury to watch for. Of course, we don't talk about pitchers much. Carlos Rodon. Look, there's a lot of ways people to go on this. We know a couple things from Rodon. I'm the type who does tend to try to believe the player and the team a little bit first. There's a lot of doom and gloom out there where they say, expect, you know, I'm just prepared for him not to play for the whole season. Look, if you want to be miserable, that's fine. Go ahead and do that, right? But for those of you who have drafted Rodon, who are thinking about drafting Rodon soon, I still have him inside my top 20 at starting pitcher because he may miss a month of the season. Right. That'll probably put him around 130 to 150 innings, depending on exactly how much of April he misses. But again, he did that in 2021. And guess what? He finished as like the 12th starting pitcher because he's been so good when he plays. So Yes, again, there is some risk.
You make
there.
Me feel good when you say that, because I drafted him in the fifth round of my RAS-LAM, which is a best ball, so which is cool. So, I mean, you know, go ahead. I'm
with
sorry.
With Rodon, you also have to remember, like, his own words have said, I went through this last year and played through it. I would be playing through it now if it were midseason or late season, right? And again, you know, I do think there's some merit to the concept of, with Carlos Rodon, they want him ready for the full season, so why pitch through it now, right? Again, you should move him down your boards. He was probably a top 5 to 7 pitcher for you before. Now he's more like top 17 to 20, 17 to 25, depending on how much risk tolerance you're willing to take on, what your roster looks like by that point. But don't take him off your board. Look, some of you are going to do that. That's fine. You have major risk tolerance issues. That's okay.
Sure,
right? You can
sure.
build teams well that way, but you don't have to do that. Or if you've already drafted, your season's not over, folks. Like him missing the month of April stinks. Mm-hmm. But if all he does is miss the month of April, you still, I mean, if you drafted Carlos Rodon and I told you, don't worry, he's Garrett, you know, I still think he finishes as pitcher number 15. Does that mean you lost? Right? Like you're starting pitcher 1 or 2 finishes as a top 15 starting pitcher or a top 20 starting pitcher. Like that's what you wanted. That's what you get. It just will look a little different than you may have expected.
I like Mr. Optimist over here, because on the one hand, you're right. You know, he pitched through it last season, you know, had a forearm strain. On the other hand, you can look at it, if you're a negative Nelly, that, you know, this is a recurring injury that's going to eventually need TJ surgery because it's a forearm. But I love the optimism on your part, Mr. Chu.
Well, it's spring. You got to have it, right? Especially for the folks that already drafted, right? Like, don't be sad yet. Now, again, move him down your board. See how your league adapts. Really interested to see what happens in auction for Carlos Rodon.
Right. But could be a big discount.
It's definitely something to keep an eye on. And, of course, the big name that's going to come out of that everyone should be paying attention to, that is Clark Schmidt.
Right. He's took the words right out of my mouth. Yes.
Yeah. He's at the back of that. Now, again, Nestor Cortes has been dealing with some injury as well. I'm interested to see if he is ready for the start of the season. It sounds like he will be.
Thankfully, it's a hamstring and not his arm.
Yeah. It is. And it's slowing down his ramp up a little bit. We'll see if that does turn into anything. But the only one I think right now that's draftable out of all this is Clark Schmidt. I think he's worth a look in the back of drafts, especially in those shallower leagues, because he should get some opportunities early. It doesn't really change anything for me on Domingo Germán, though, just because he was already going to be in the rotation and he's fine.
Right. Absolutely. Couple other pitchers, Ranger Suarez for the Phillies, forearm tightness. To me, that just elevates a guy like Bailey Falter. He's had a bad spring, but decent minor league numbers. And now, on top of that, the Phillies with Andrew Painter, who had a bunch of helium, being shut down as well with a ulnar collateral ligament sprain. So, I'm going to make a confession. I got auto-drafted in my TGFBI, because sometimes when you deal with these, it's all my fault, but sometimes when you deal with these slow pitch clocks and it's the end of the day, you know, you keep on waiting for the person ahead of you to make the pick, and then all of a sudden he makes the pick late in the day, and then, you know, you go to bed, and then the timer ran out, so I got auto-picked on Andrew Painter. What am I going to do?
Probably not much of anything. That's a tough one. Again, with these sprains, you can't just have surgery, right? Surgery doesn't fix sprains, right? You can't do it till
rest.
It's torn. Yeah, so it has to be rest. So anyone who's talking about he should just have surgery is wrong fundamentally, because you can't surgically repair a sprain. But it just doesn't work that way. You can't just get it out of the way, because it has to actually tear. You could replace the ligament, I guess, but for what? Sprains can heal. Again, track record is not great, but it is something that could happen. You know, I'd really love to see out of this is Matt Strom getting a look in the rotation again. He's in their bullpen right now, and he's been electric as part of a bullpen. His ERA doesn't always look good, but man, the guy can strike out a lot of guys. I don't think that's going to happen. But I would be interested to see it if it ever did happen again. It just won't. But Bailey Falter is probably the one that slides in. You know, he's already in. He's fine. He's young. We'll see how it goes. But you know, there's still going to be more injuries happening. We're going to hear a lot about them for the next 2 weeks. We're going to hear about them in the first part of April, especially when we start seeing guys pitching in cold weather. Try not to panic. You know, injury risk tolerance is a big thing to think about, but just, you know, don't panic just because a guy won't be ready for opening day, especially on the hitter side, because a week worth of at-bats just doesn't matter that much in terms of guys that we were expecting to have 500 to 600 plate appearances. A week's worth of at-bats just don't matter.
Right.
Right. It matters maybe in a head-to-head league for a week, but in Roto, it just doesn't. You'd rather have them be healthy if that's all you have to trade is a week. You know, guys are going to miss a week here and there. Very few players play 160 games. So maybe, you know, you take off five, go to anyone's projection, take off five or six games and see if it changes where they rank. It just really doesn't.
Right, right. Okay. So another good spot for us to take a quick break. We talk about third base as being a position where just not a lot of depth, but there's a couple of third basemen that have been just killing it in spring training. Want to talk to Scott about that, talk about a little bit more of some risers and fallers, and then Scott's going to try to convince me to draft Spencer Torkelson right when we come back. So we'll be right back right after this. And we're back. Hacks and Jacks Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I had teased a couple of third basemen that are having pretty big springs, and just wondering if they have a shot to actually make their respective teams. Christian Encarnacion Strand, first base, third base, eligible in some leagues. Is having a huge spring there, Scott. Last I looked, 4 home runs, 13 RBI, 625 batting average. Had 32 home runs and 114 RBI for 3 teams in the minor leagues last season. His highest team played for is a double-A team. What are you thinking about Encarnacion Strand as a dart throw late in drafts, especially, you know, if, you know, the Reds start to rest Votto even more, the fact that Encarnacion Strand could play some first base as well.
Yeah, so he's kind of interesting very, very late. Like, I'm not sure he actually makes the team out of spring. He's definitely a name to watch for. As you know, I expect him to actually start the season in AAA, but he looked amazing in AA. And the guy in front of him is actually a fairly unproven, but not necessarily, you know, nobody in Spencer Steer, right?
Yeah, we've spoken about him.
Yeah, we have spoken about Spencer Steer. So part of the thing was that he had no competition, and now he kind of does.
Yes.
He's a power bat. He's really more for AL only in deep leagues because I think he's going to be an accumulator. But if he is not, right, if he's unable to really get the ball rolling for Cincinnati, then I think, you know, because he's really not a good defender. And by not a good defender, I mean he's a really bad defender, and he hasn't been that much better in the spring. So Spencer Steer is the only thing in front of him, which means there is a path forward. I think definitely in dynasty leagues, leagues with very, very deep benches where you might hold some guys who are not in the major leagues yet. There's definitely dart throw potential there. I don't want someone to think in a 12-team league that he should be on your board.
Right.
He's not, but he's someone that might be on your watch list because again, if he does get up to Cincinnati, he could hit a bunch of home runs because it's not a very big ballpark. We talk about that all the time. So, and it's hard to pitch in Cincinnati in the winter but like around here, April is winter. Like, it's still winter up here. It's not spring. That's why spring training is not hosted in the great state of Michigan or Ohio, right? We don't host it here because it's ugly here. So
that's like my daughter took a trip this weekend to Chicago. That's why I'm babysitting the bug. And as she was prepping for this, she's like, yeah, maybe I could see the Cubs in spring training. I'm like, honey, you go to Chicago and the Cubs do not have their spring training facility in the Windy City in March.
And even if they did, you don't want to go. It's cold.
I went to a Cubs game in May and we had to buy winter jackets. It was cold.
I got like 2 inches of snow last night, right? Like, not the time, but he is interesting, if only because there's not much in front of him. If Spencer, especially if Spencer Steer starts slow at all.
Right. We're talking about Encarnacion Strand.
Yeah. So Encarnacion Strand has a chance if Steer starts out slow at all. There might actually be someone who can push him now.
What about Mets third base prospect Brett Beatty? Had a cup of coffee with the team last season. having a nice spring, a 409 batting average with a 1.071 OPS. Obviously, just, you know, 25 plate appearances, but in three minor league seasons, has a career 289, 390, 493 triple slash. He had 19 home runs, 60 RBI in 95 games, mostly in Double A last season, but had a few at bats in Triple A. Only 11 games in the bigs, but had a 90% K rate, so he wasn't totally overwhelmed. But again, only 11 games. What do you think about Brett Beatty's chance to securing a spot on the big league roster?
Man, that's another really difficult roster to break into because they've got Eduardo Escobar still on that team. Just really, yeah. I think, plugging up third base. You obviously are not going to put him at first base with Pete Alonso there. There might be some room at DH, but Darren Ruff still there to be DH. Tommy Pham, I expect to take some DH plate appearances here and there. And Daniel Vogelbach, of course, who, you know, walks and hits righties and doesn't do anything else. He's all there. Even if he got up, I'd wonder. He does have five hard hit, well, actually more than hard hit. He has five batted balls over 100 miles an hour so far this spring. Pretty good number for Beatty. A lot of them have been fairly low hit balls, like less than 10 degree launch angle, but he did have one that was a little bigger, did not get any results for it. But, you know, I like Beatty. I think there's still a lot to be excited about from his, from a prospector's perspective. I'm sorry, he had four hard hit balls over 100 miles an hour, but it's just hard to find the opportunity. And as much, you know, you love to bet on talent, but you can't bet on talent when there's absolutely no opportunity. And right now, that's what it looks like, because it doesn't matter what Eduardo Escobar does in spring. He's probably the starting third baseman either way.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's take a look at some players that are rising and falling in ADP. We already spoke about Jordan Walker, and interesting to see what the next week looks like in terms of, because of his shoulder injury. But prior to that, had 11.4 rise in his average pick in ESPN leagues. So we already spoke about him. But you know who else is going up? And we don't really talk pitchers a lot, but Chris Sale, 10.7 rise in his average pick in ESPN leagues. And look, the guy, I spoke about him a couple of minutes ago, where, you know, injury history and all that, but throws two innings of shutout ball and all is forgotten. I mean, good news is that his most recent injuries after that TJ surgery weren't really shoulder related. He had a workout injury with his ribs and finger injury due to a comeback into the mound, and it was a dope and got into a bicycle accident and hurt his wrist. But do you have any shares of Chris Sale? And, you know, I guess he's probably going in the middle innings at this stage, no?
Yeah, so his ADP has definitely moved up a bit. I'm excited because we haven't seen him in quite a while. But you also have to remember, we actually haven't seen him be super good in quite a while, right? So he did pitch mostly a full season back in 2019, but the results weren't really there. Now the FIP and the underlying metrics were there, but he had a 4.40 ERA in that 2019 season. Of course, the home run fly ball spike sort of happened to him, which, you know, kind of happened everywhere in 2019. But, you know, I like Chris Sale, just making sure that you already have innings, but definitely is a part of the middle of your rotation. Of course, he's going up because he's pitching, right? And we want him to pitch. But again, it is quite a while since we've seen him pitch any major innings. It's, you know, 2019 is the last time. We'll see how it goes, but definitely worth a look. Just keep in mind that it's a high upside, low floor kind of play. Just know what you're getting into. I like Chris Sale in the sense that he's definitely on my board. It's just, I often take my pitching risk at like closer to the top, so I don't usually have the room for him.
Arizona Diamondbacks have a lot of speed in their outfield. We spoke about Corbin Carroll already getting the extension on his contract and being a speedster. Alec Thomas is another speedster, but Jake McCarthy, his average pick has gone up 8.6% over the past week. And if you look at what this guy did in his final 63 games of last season, he had five home runs, 34 RBI. But the stolen bases were key. He had 21 stolen bases, only got caught three times in the final 63 games. Actually, probably, you know, helped out a lot of teams to win their leagues in that last month.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he drove a lot of people, to where he needed to be. He's not hitting well. It's funny because he's moving up, but it's not because of how well he's doing in spring, right? He's got a 421 OPS so far this spring. I'm not really looking for that much for him in the spring. He wasn't someone that I was really just thinking like, oh, I need to see, I have an article out there about what I was looking for in spring, and Jake McCarthy just wasn't really something I cared about that much. He's not striking out a ton. He's only got four strikeouts. He has four strikeouts. Yeah, no, just four. Four strikeouts so far in 26 at bats. So not really something that I'm worried about, but I think he's just moving up because people realize how good he was right now. Now the numbers we're referencing in terms of moving up are from ESPN. So those are 12 team leagues, not the same as NFBC ADP. And Jake McCarthy is definitely someone who will actually move down my board when I'm looking at head to head leagues, simply because I just don't value stolen bases as much in a head to head league. So Jake McCarthy just doesn't have as good of a place on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We spoke a little bit about Tyler O'Neill just a couple of seconds ago. You were talking about his injury history, and his ADP in ESPN leagues up 7.6% over the past week. Again, it's not because of his spring training. He's batting 143 this spring in 16 plate appearances, and really coming off a poor season where the strikeout rate was improved, but still just about 27%, batted .228, 14 homers, 14 stolen bases. Projection models, they expect him to hit somewhere in the 240s, 250 range with a 20-plus potential in terms of home runs and stolen bases. What do you think is driving his move up the boards in ESPN leagues?
Yeah, I'm not sure. we haven't really learned anything new about what Tyler O'Neill is or what he's bringing to his team right now. The biggest thing right now is that he's healthy, right? Mm-hmm. That's a big deal, because that's really the main thing you're looking for in Tyler O'Neill, because as a healthy player, there's no reason he can't threaten 30 home runs and 20 stolen bases. Now that is something very much in his wheelhouse. I think the .286 batting average we saw in 2021 is nuts. I don't think that's really on the table, but .250 to .260, I think, is very realistic. If he's walking close to 10% of the time like he did last season, I think he'll have a decent OBP as well. But it's really the power and speed you're after. So as he's healthy, he will move up boards. Right. But that's about it. It shouldn't be that much, because there's still all the risk there. But again, being healthy at the start of the season does mean a lot for players that are injury prone. And when you're looking at Tyler O'Neill this spring, all you're thinking is he hurt?
Right.
Does he look hurt?
Are you taking any chances on Jarred Kelenic, who's killing it this spring? Four home runs, seven RBI, and one stolen base, .429 batting average in 23 plate appearances. I'm sure that there are a lot of fantasy baseball managers who've been there, done that in terms of Jarred Kelenic, but should we trust him this time?
I thought it was a mistake. I mean, so first of all, he is having an amazing spring. It's weird. He doesn't actually have any batted balls over 100 miles an hour, despite all this success, which is kind of weird. Don't read into it too much, but it's at least weird, right? Mm-hmm. Like he should certainly have more than that. The news I want to hear is that they're going to start him, right? Because right now he's not projected to be a starter, I don't believe, for the Mariners. So with that, and it's not as though, I mean, there's a lot of right-handers in this lineup, which means there's room for a lefty, but where, right? Maybe DH with AJ Pollock, but Teoscar Hernandez is going to play every day. Julio Rodriguez is going to play every day. So Kelenic, might be the large side of a platoon, right? So he might just be their everyday left fielder, and he'll switch out with, any number of random guys they pull up.
Mm-hmm.
But so he might start on opening day if they play a righty, right? But I'd love to see full-time at bats, but with the ADP being so low right now, I think you have to take some kind of chance, because even if the batting average is never what we hoped, right? Even if that, that doesn't work out, I'm still very much excited about the fact that he could still be a, 20 to 25 in a full season. I think he could be a 25 home run, 15 stolen base kind of player. Mm-hmm. We just don't, sort of like a poor man's version of Tyler O'Neill, right? Who doesn't have a durability problem as much as he has a contact problem. So as I'm looking at Jared Kelenic, you know, this spring, what I'm also really looking at is he striking out a ton? That's really been the thing that's crushed him in the major leagues. As of right now, he has only 6 strikeouts in his 23 at bats, 6 strikeouts, 2 walks. That's pretty good, right? Mm-hmm. So it's less than I'm looking at the home runs because he's about to go to a very, very difficult place to hit, right? The spring training stadium is much better for Seattle than their real home ballpark. Mm-hmm. So with him, I really want to see, does he strike out? Making contact, that's good. I don't really care if it's doubles or home runs or whatever. I want to see if he's making contact. He is. He's got 10 hits already in 9
Kelenic,
games. With Kelenic. But, you know, again, it's the 6 strikeouts. I don't want to see any big spikes in that. But as of right now, looking pretty good on the strikeout front. That's what I care about the most.
Right. Okay. Let's take a look at a couple of ADP fallers, and then I want to get your take on a couple of Tiger players. I'm sure you're chomping at the bit with that, but Tyler Glasnow, oblique strain, going to miss up to 2 months. Joe Musgrove dropped a weight on his big toe, but might be ready for the start of the season. And Jurickson Profar, who's a free agent, but rumors that the Rockies are interested in him. They're the top 3 in terms of fallers in ADP over the past week. In ESPN, but Seiya Suzuki down a 13.1%, dealing with an oblique injury, original six-week window to recover. Oblique injuries never easy to recover from.
No, they aren't. And, you know, he will start the season on the IL probably. I don't know if that they've made that official yet, but that it's just likely. It does open up some room on the Cubs roster to see a couple at-bats from maybe like Edwin Rios, who is someone who I think is interesting because he's got a bunch of power. He might DH for them. I think it's going to make Patrick Wisdom an everyday player. You know, as far as the Cubs go, you know, Seiya Suzuki, I'm worried a little bit. We've seen this really kill guys like George Springer. George Springer's really dealt with some oblique injuries, and they can really hang around because the only way to really fix it, it's a core injury. The only way to fix it is to rest and not play. Right. So hopefully Seiya Suzuki can get over that. I think you just got to keep watching the news and don't be that surprised if he goes back on the IL after he comes out, especially if, you know, it's just not quite ready. The Cubs cannot rush him back.
Mm-hmm.
While we're talking about the Cubs, I don't think there's a player that's fallen more on my board than Christopher Morel. He cannot stop striking out this spring. It's 13 strikeouts the last I looked. Mm-hmm. He just cannot. He had a huge strikeout problem at the end of last year. He started striking out close to 40% of the time for quite a while. And it's just no good. You cannot be a major league hitter who strikes out that much, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's got a great power speed blend. He's eligible to a lot of positions. And I just don't think the Cubs can play him, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think Patrick Wisdom's going to win that third base gig. And he's not that exciting for fantasy either. And he does strike out a lot, but he's a decent defender, and at least he hits home runs.
Yeah, big power bat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if there's someone that should, you know, maybe come in a 12-team league, Christopher Morel has actually fallen off my board. I'm just not interested because what I wanted to see this spring was him not striking out, and he's done the opposite.
Yeah, yeah. And it dawned on me while you were talking about Suzuki that people that have seen him had said that he kind of bulked up a little bit this offseason, gained some muscle. So the more muscle you have, sometimes that could lead to more injury, right? And then, you know, so that
I wouldn't know personally, but I've heard that.
I don't know. I'm going to find out next week when I see you, because I've heard you're a pretty big guy. So
the core is not filled with muscles. There's not a lot to strain in here.
Justin Turner, man, it was ugly. Got hit in the face, 16 stitches that may be coming out. They may be removing those stitches today, Sunday, and you're going to hear this on Monday or whatnot. But his ADP down 11.1% in ESPN leagues. Obviously, more of a corner infielder option for you in deeper leagues. Oscar Gonzalez down 6.1%. But I think that's because, like you mentioned, ESPN leagues are 3 outfielder leagues, right? So, I mean, he's a decent option in 5 outfielder leagues, but I still see him penciled in as the Guardians' right fielder. But he's having a tough spring. I guess that could be part of it as well.
Yeah, Justin Turner, he's not going to miss opening day. It was an ugly injury, lots of blood, especially because it got him near the nose. I know Matt Manning probably did not feel good about what happened there. But, you know, really my only concern with him was the power drop off last season, only 13 home runs compared to 27 in 2021. So I guess that stinks, but he's going to bat third for the Red Sox. And while I don't love their lineup overall, the top of it is still just fine. It looks like Tristan Casas, Rafael Devers, Justin Turner, Masataka Yoshida, and Alex Verdugo, all, you know, in the top half of that lineup. So I do think he could be a good, you know, a good source of counting stats. I think he's someone who, if you're really trying to fill a corner infield spot, I think he's a guy to do it, right? You can get him quite late in drafts. You know, the fact that he's falling is interesting because, again, this is not going to impact his season, right? And Turner is going into his age 38 season. Spring training is not a time for him to tweak stuff. Like, he's not, like, messing with his swing, right? Like, the guy's going to be Justin Turner. So I like Justin Turner as a, you know, last round dart throw, or maybe on your watch list if your third baseman for some reason starts missing some time or you need to fill in at your utility, Justin Turner's right there. And he could definitely get you some RBI.
Like I said, corner infield spot too.
Yeah.
If you wait on that. So, but let's talk about your Tigers, man. Riley Green having a nice spring, 2 home runs, 7 RBI so far, 333 batting average post hype sleeper, who I'm interested in, obviously. And you were tweeting a lot about Spencer Torkelson, right, this week?
Yeah, I was. Let's start with Riley Green. This guy is barreling the ball everywhere right now. He slowed down a little bit in his last few games, but I, you know, I've heard some chatter that, you know, people are like, oh, well, what is Riley Green really going to do well? I think the first thing you have to remember is that, you know, Riley Green was a big prospect. And if you looked at the rolling charts, and I'm happy to show you again, if you ever want to ask at If The Chew Fits on Twitter, I'll show them to you. This guy really improved as the season went on. He got much better making contact. We saw the power, you know, we saw power stay very stable as he made more contact. So it's not as though he was trading it off. Riley Green is someone who I really think could make a big impact, and both in power and speed. He's got both, and I think the contact is going to be better than projections suspect. So when you're looking at, you know, a lot of folks are going to use an auction calculator, I think they're really important, but it's also important to pick out the guys who you think are going to do better than those auction calculator values say. Like Riley Green is one of those guys for me who I just think will be better than that. Right? And not just because, I mean, having a hot spring is great. Seeing him hit the ball really, really hard. I mean, it's what I think it's let me make the quick count here. 8 batted balls over 100 miles an hour, most of them over, like, at least half of them over 105 miles an hour, just ripping the ball. Only one of those is a ground ball, by the way. Just one. One of those is a hard hit ball that's on the ground. Everything else is a line drive or a fly ball. Really love that. Speaking of, that's when I'll talk about Spencer Torkelson, right? So spring training is a very small sample. And that's something that you just sort of have to deal with because it makes it so you'd think if you just saw that, if you hadn't watched Spencer Torkelson at all and you just look at his spring training numbers, you'd think, wow, this guy's been bad, right? He's doing really poorly. And it couldn't be further from the truth. Spencer Torkelson has actually 9 batted balls over 100 miles an hour, right? In fact, almost all of them are over 105 miles an hour, right? 7 of them over 105 miles an hour. And of those 7 batted balls over 105 miles an hour, one of them was a ground ball, right? Just one. And only 2 of them were hits, right? He has 5 barrels that were 105 miles an hour or harder. 5. Five. And you know how many hits he has for him? 0. 0. He has 5 line out, fly out, line out, fly out, fly out. On balls hit, 105, he actually had 110 mile an hour line drive as a line out, 109.7 mile per hour fly ball out. Right now, that'll happen a little bit in Comerica, but like this dude is wrecking the ball, right? He's not striking out a ton. His strikeout numbers look a little worse than they should because Spencer Torkelson had 1-4 strikeout game a little while back. Otherwise, strikeout rate's been great. Actually, I might be confusing him with Akil Badu. I've been watching a lot of Tiger spring training. But Spencer Torkelson is spraying the ball. Yeah, Spencer Torkelson is spraying the ball all over the place. He's hitting the ball really, really hard. I guess I wish he was pulling it a little bit more because that's going to get the ball over the fence. But, I mean, you can't ask for more. Again, as a 12-teamer, I can't tell you to start him as a top 12 first base choice. But definitely, I love him as a last round pick or close to last round. I love him as like that hitter on your bench because this was the best college hitter we've seen in a long time. And yes, it's true, guys flame out, but this is like his third professional like year in pro ball, right? Like, you don't say after 2 years a guy's flamed out, right? Especially when only one of them was in the major leagues at all. He's taking some time to adjust. I think he's going to do it. We definitely saw him get much better at making contact, making decisions as the season went on. Last season, I think he's carried that into the spring, which is exactly what I want to see. I'm seeing him hit the ball really hard this spring, exactly what I wanted to see. Spencer Torkelson should be all over your radar late in drafts. And if he's not, it's because, you know, you're looking too much just at the results in spring training. And it's the last thing you should look at. You know, whether you care a lot more about process in spring training than you do anything else. And it's really hard to get a look at what process is for these players because we don't talk to them every day. We don't get to hear them think in the box, but you do get to see, you can look up the batted ball data, right? And he's got nine, right? Nine batted balls over 100 miles an hour. Seven of them over 105 miles an hour. He does that in the regular season. I'm telling you, he's in those seven batted balls, he's slugging 429, right? Seven batted balls over 105 miles an hour, he's slugging 429. The league average, right? They're pretty much all barrels, right? The league slugging average on a barrel is 1.5, right? It's 1,500, right? So that luck is going to turn around. I mean, it's the classic case of every time he hits a ball hard, it's like right at a guy. Line drive, but it's right at the center fielder, right? That will not continue.
Yep.
He's going to hit the ball a lot better. You got to move him up. So he's someone to keep an eye on. If we're going to talk about one more Tiger, Parker Meadows just had a massive game, couple of home runs. Parker Meadows is someone who I don't think he's going to start the season in there, but his stock has fallen a lot in dynasty leagues. And if you can get him, you know, for free, maybe he's even out there. Take a look at Parker Meadows. He's hitting the ball really well. And it's going to be, a pretty active outfield rotation for the Tigers early in the season as they try to find all the pieces they want for that outfield. They are going to try to win games after all. So just something to keep an eye on. Really a big fan of what some of these guys have done in the spring. But most importantly, again, it's not just the results. Like, just because the results are bad doesn't mean the play is bad, right? Like, look at some of the batted ball data. Look at the strikeouts. Look at the walks. Make sure that part's good. That's the part that means the most in spring training, not the fact that it fell for a single or a double.
Gotcha. Okay. Good analysis. Spencer Torkelson expected to hit somewhere around, if you look at the major projection models, 20 homer guy, going to be playing first base every day for the Tigers. So definitely someone to keep on your radar, free in drafts. And Riley Green also going way deep in drafts, somebody that I definitely will be looking into just because of his pedigree. I mean, you know, so we'll see, having a nice spring as well. So good stuff from Scott. And I think that's going to basically slam the lid on things for this week. Doesn't look like we're going to be able to put out a podcast next week because we're going to be drafting all weekend at the Tout Wars event. So good luck to you, Scott. I'm really looking forward to meeting you in person, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you say that because you haven't done it yet. So you try to hold on to this excitement and don't, you know, I'll deflate it quickly when you meet me, but it'll be a lot of fun. And I'm excited to talk about the things that are happening, especially as we have even more spring data, right? Yeah. And we'll have, you know, hopefully we can talk about a couple more guys who are really just wrecking the ball all over the place. Guys like Chris Bryant. Mm-hmm. Although I will say, you know, before we go, there's one thing to really point out about the spring training data, the StatCast data. It's really, really cool. There's just one thing you need to remember to do, and that's sort of ignore Salt River Fields at Talking Stick. So Salt River Fields at Talking Stick, it's where the Rockies play their spring training games, and that gun is crazy hot. Almost all, like all of the top four hits, you know, all the top four hits in spring training in terms of exit velocity, all at Salt River.
Wow.
Right. And like the majority of the top 13 to 15 are all at Salt River just because the gun's hot. Take a couple miles an hour, at least a couple miles an hour off the exit velocity on hits in that particular stadium.
Interesting stuff. Good stuff, Scott. All right. So follow this man at If the Chew Fits. You can follow me at Joe Galina. And as always, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities. and we'll see you next time.